They used to print them on palm leaves, and they were really heavy, so they used to carry them around in baskets. And that's why it's called the Tipitaka, the three baskets, because there was hundreds of baskets, no doubt, but there were three main types. I think they probably color-coded them or something like that. And the ones that were the sutras were one set of baskets. And this belongs to the set of baskets that were the sutras, written on palm leaves, painstakingly, and carried around from place to place. And these ones are the ones where you didn't talk too long. So they're middle length. Then there's other ones called the Digha Nikaya. They're the long ones. Okay, so there are 152 different talks or suttas. Sutta means hearing. And there are 152 in this book. And this is a new translation. And it's quite wonderful. I was remembering earlier with Bob and Kathy that when I first went to Thailand to live there in monasteries, the monastery that I had been accepted to go and stay at, they didn't expect me for some reason when I was expecting them to expect me. Such is life. And so there was nobody there who spoke English when I arrived. But they had a library of English, the whole Tipitaka, the Pali Text Society Tipitaka, and all kinds of wonderful Buddhist books. All schools, like just wonderful, because this guy from New York City, who was a millionaire, bhikkhu, he was a bhikkhu and he belonged to this family that was very rich and everybody died young and left him all this money and he always wanted to be a monk. So he moved to this monastery in Thailand. He'd been there like 10 years before I got there and he bought this library. And then he left it. And it was packed in boxes when I got there. And somebody said told me that there were books. So I went and I found this room full of these boxes of books. Some of them were starting to go moldy because of the rain and the dampness. This incredible, you know, like me finding a library, you know what this was like, folks. Hello, come in. You're not late. We haven't even really started yet. So bring a cushion and lean against a wall or whatever you feel comfortable. And so what I did, because nobody was there who spoke English, and because I spoke no Thai whatsoever, was I got the Majjhima Nikaya. And I read a sutra, and then I would meditate on it, like sometimes line by line, sometimes paragraph by paragraph, occasionally, because I was so brilliant and so fully awakened. Oh, sutra at a time, you know, just until the conceit dawned and I went back down to line by line. And that's how I learned the basic teachings of Buddhism, was through this text. It took me about not quite a year to read it and meditate on it. And shortly after I'd been there, then you are given a text. And most of the time, you can't understand a word. And it's like a bunch of mumbo jumbo. And everybody's sitting around saying all these meaningless things. And especially us, because I mean, aren't we just conceited? I mean, don't we just hate rote? Don't we? Mm-hmm. Well, if I can't understand it, why am I repeating this meaningless stuff? Meaningless meaning I do not understand it. It does not fit into my limited view of the universe. Therefore, it can't be reasonable. Does that make sense? But these don't fit in to one's limited view of the universe. One's limited view of the universe rises and falls within these concepts. and then rises again and then falls again. So if one persists in doing these meaningless practices, a kind of sanity of blind wandering that maintains blind wandering, conceit and views. Greed, hatred, and delusion are poison. I was saying about in the Tibetan where you have the protective circle, that's ignorance. That's the first thing that there is. First there is ignoring. There is a state of totality and then there is ignoring. And the ignoring arises and then there is a kind of an energy that starts craving, conceit, conceit is basically self-referencing or referring to partial identity rather than totality. Okay? Is that okay? Okay. And so craving, conceit, and view, false view or partial view. Either Micha Ditti or Ditti, false view or partial view. But not totality, clear understanding.
Okay, so I thought my definite conceit was to say I'm better than others, but it's not just I'm better than others, it's just saying I'm self-separate from others.
The Buddha said there are three types of conceit. He's good, eh, with those laundry lists? I mean, you just think you got one, but then if you're a Buddhist, you got three. So here they are. I am better than. I am worse than. You know how much you've been around people that no matter what, they're always suffering more? You know how much energy it takes to keep them happy? It's amazing how much their focus, they draw all the energy from everyone, don't they? And people who I am better than, that's a big draw of energy too. Or I am equal to. You know when you're talking to somebody and you tell them something and you can see after about 3 minutes into the conversation when you're telling them this wonderful thing, that little shutter go down behind their eyeballs about a quarter inch back, the little click comes down, and you just know that they're waiting for you to shut up so they can tell you the same story that happened to them. You know that one? Where you say, geez, you know, my Aunt Maud just the other day bought the most beautiful new washing machine. I mean, it has 3 cycles and 23 years of warranty service, and about then the little shutter comes down. She only paid $23, $25 for it. You see the little shutter, say, oh yeah, geez, my aunt Gladys, she bought one for $22. You know, I am equal. I have an equal experience to you. And why? Because all of them are, whatever is out there is reference to oneself. That's why it's conceit, because there is no way to see beyond oneself. And that's why it's like being in jail. If you can't see beyond yourself, it's like being in jail.
Okay,
does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it sure does. Yeah. So it's not just being better than, but to be...
I am better than, I am worse than, I am equal to. Yes. Buddha said 3 conceits. I am better, I am worse, I am equal. Because they're all I.
Wait,
he's not finished. Then you, and then you.
One other quick question. Once you said about views, and then you were saying about wrong views, does it also include someone has a view which they believe 100% is truth, that's their truth, what they see, and when someone else comes along with another truth, that they say, well, that, you know, I can't even listen because this is my truth. And
those are called partial views. Any view that does not include all views is a partial view. A view that includes all views is called a whole view or complete view. Apparently, only someone who is like approaching or well into Buddhahood can do that. And part of the training of the Eightfold Path is to teach oneself how to do that. And how you do that is you start by working with your own views in your own being. For example, when you see something, this is what is the definition of, in the Eightfold Path, the seventh point of the Eightfold Path is right awareness. Right? You understand that, isn't it? So what you do to practice right awareness is when you see something you like, notice that you like it, notice your view, and then pretend that you can find something you don't like about it, and practice developing the ability to dislike it. Now, isn't that just an exercise you want to run out and do right away? Yeah, I love to dislike things I like. Oh, thanks, sis. And then the second point is when you see something you dislike, then notice that and then pick something about it you could like and practice liking it. That's the second point. This is interesting, isn't it? A third point is when you can find something you dislike in something you like, that's the third point, when you've got the first point covered, then develop that so that they're equal. You can either like it or dislike it equally. It doesn't say you're neutral about it or you decide not to play because it's not fun anymore. But on the one hand, you can like it, and on the other hand, you can dislike it equally. Isn't that interesting? And then, of course, you know what the fourth one is. When you see something you dislike, become aware of something you could like about it. Equally, hold the like and the dislike. That's the fourth one. Equally hold the like and the dislike. Equally. The fifth one, according to Shakyamuni Buddha, only a Buddha or a Tathagata could do. And that is, hold both the like and the dislike in your mind at the same time. And why someone who is not a Tathagata can't do that is because we are caught in view. The sense of self, conceit, will disappear before view will. That's interesting. I found that very interesting when I read that in the sutras and I meditated on it. I found that very interesting. Okay, now who had a question? Yeah.
Perhaps you've answered it, but how does one person interact with it without there, without self-referencing, because you're here, and there's always the self that comes into it, but how could you?
By understanding that self is arising and falling in every moment, by not believing in a permanent self. There's a difference when you can feel the permeability of self, or when you actually think, I am a separate person. They're very different feelings. When there is an emotion and it's not anybody's, it's everybody's. When there is an understanding that this view arises, these words are the words that I choose to speak, because of the cause and effect that has created the I who is making this choice. They are no more valid than this cause and effect I. All of them are valid. Well, you neither negate the sense of self, nor do you cling to the sense of self. Self is continuously arising and continuously dissolving. So there isn't like that, the motive is not to affirm self or to make self more potent or more right. You can feel when people have, I can feel when people have softened that sense of self, can't you? There's a whole level of fear that's
right,
gone.
There's not a fixed view.
It's the causes and conditions out of continuously arising, continuously dissolving. Mm-hmm. So all kinds of stories point to that. You know, like the one I told you at least 10 times about the guy who decided he was getting older now and he wanted to study with a teacher because he wasn't happy. So he was a very rich millionaire in New York, so he sold everything and or sold a bunch of stuff and got out of business and, you know, flew to the Himalayas and got some Sherpas to carry him up to this guru, and they put him down in front of this guru, and he said, you know, please tell me the secret of life. And the guru said, no, I'm sorry, you have too many possessions. If you don't have so many possessions, you know, then I could tell you, but now you can't possibly hear because you'd be too worried about how, you know, you can't, your mind isn't clear enough, it's too concerned with all your material. So he goes back and he says, yeah, that guy was just a con artist and he gets twice as busy. And then after another 10 years, he thinks, yeah, I really would like to know the meaning of life. So then he says, okay, I'll sell everything. So he sells his wife and his kids and his car and businesses, and, you know, he sails on his ocean-going yacht with his crew of 40 young people, you know, across to India, and then he sells the 40 young people in the yacht, and he buys a train, and he travels to the Himalayas, and he sells the train, and he gets a bunch of people to carry up, and then he gives everybody their freedom, he gives all his clothes away, and he's standing there in front of the guru, freezing to death, and he says, okay, I'm ready, and he says, tell me the secret of life, and the man says, oh, the secret of life is in this flower, is this flower. You mean to tell me? I came here twice. The second time after having sold everything, my wife, my kids, my businesses, my train, my book, my crew, to tell you to tell me the secret of life is in a goddamn flower? And the guru says, you mean it isn't? See, that's like that kind of permeable, like, oh, okay. Another view? It's beautiful, isn't it? That's a very old joke. I'm sure you've all heard it at least three times from me, haven't you? Yeah, maybe I change a few lines here or there, but... And exactly, you know, you mean it isn't? Oh, okay, here. It's not clinging to. There's an ease there. Is that good?
Yeah, thank you.
Finally.
Okay. I guess my question, you said, you know, about the self, about three things that I'm better than the other person? The
conceit.
Conceit, yeah.
There are three types of conceit.
Conceit, yeah. And one is, I'm better than you, I'm never good as you, or I'm
equal. Yeah.
So what is the option?
Yeah, the options is not always referencing to one's own, not always trying to create a self. Yeah, how much of one's life, except when you're really interested in something, then you drop the feeling of what I am doing and you actually get absorbed in that. Mm-hmm. When you look at something that's very beautiful.
So it's kind of...
Or you're listening to music. Yeah, you drop that self-referencing. You're self-conscious, or you're present.
Yeah, so I'm going to say it's the Western, particularly Western concept of individualization, the importance of self. I mean, the whole thing is...
I don't think Buddhism stands a chance in North America, do you? We're all too dull. Too in love with themselves.
Yeah.
But boy, would it ever be refreshing?
Yeah.
But I mean, not just North America, everywhere.
Everywhere.
There is no difference. You know. It's mind. So everywhere, it's the same. That quality of self-referencing is so hard to really perceive. To really feel how lacking, how much it is like a jail cell. It doesn't let a flow of energy occur. Doesn't let the mind move to greater understanding. So you have to practice knowing that you do know other states. You have to keep remembering, you know, what's it like? No, oh, yeah, I do know other states. Oh, yeah, I do like music. I do like scenery. I do like cats and dharma and gardens. And And that's also why in Buddhism it's so important to develop a wholesome mind state, because if there's a wholesome mind state, then you're loving yourself. If you're loving yourself, you're not trying to protect yourself. You're not self-clinging. When the mind is wholesome, when you feel good about yourself, there's not so much self-clinging. Things are softer. You're not living by so many rules. You don't feel good about yourself, you got more rules, don't you? But what everybody else is supposed to be doing especially. Okay? So, you want to start? Anytime, you know, you want to. I think we should try to read as much as we can for how long and then ask questions. Somebody got, who's my timekeeper? You my timekeeper? What time is it?
Time is 8.
Just roughly. 8:15?
Yeah.
Okay. So we read for 20 minutes and then we'll have questions for you.
I like 8:15.
20 minutes?
8:15.
Yeah. So you want to time me, somebody, 20 minutes, you want to read?
Okay. Thus I have heard, on one occasion the Blessed One was living in Ukatata, in the Sabaga Grove at the root of the Royal Sala Tree. Then he addressed the bhikkhus. Thus bhikkhus, Venerable Sirdha replied, the Blessed One said this, Bhikkhus, I shall teach you a discourse on the root of all things. Listen and attend closely to what I say. Yes, Venerable Sir, the Bhikkhus replied. The Blessed One said this, the ordinary person. Here, Bhikkhus, an untaught ordinary person, has no regard for noble ones, and is unskilled and undisciplined in their dharma, has no regard for true men, and is unskilled and undisciplined in their dharma, perceives earth as earth. Having perceived earth as earth, he conceives himself as earth. He conceives himself in earth. He conceives himself apart from earth. He conceives earth to be mine. He delights in earth. Why is that? He has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives water as water. Having perceived water as water, he conceives himself as water. He conceives himself in water. He conceives himself apart from water. He conceives water to be mine. He delights in water. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. Perceives fire as fire. Having perceived fire as fire, he conceives himself as fire. He conceives himself in fire, conceives himself apart from fire. Conceives himself fire to mine. He conceives fire to be mine. He delights in fire. Why is that? Because he's not fully understood it, I say. He perceives air as air. Having perceived air as air, he conceives himself as air. He conceives himself in air. He conceives himself apart from air. He conceives air to be mine. He delights in air. Why is that? He has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives beings as beings. Having perceived beings as beings, he conceives himself.
Mm-mm.
No, he conceives beings. He conceives himself in beings. He conceives himself apart from beings. He conceives beings to be mine. He delights in beings. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives gods as gods. having perceived gods as gods, he conceives gods, he conceives himself in gods. He conceives himself apart from gods. He conceives gods to be mine. He delights in gods. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives Pajapati as Pajapati. Having perceived Pajapati as Pajapati, he conceives Pajapati. He conceives himself in Pajapati. He conceives himself apart from Pajapati. He conceives Pajapati to be mine. He delights in Pajapati. Why is that? Because he's not fully understood it, I say. He perceives Brahma as Brahma. He perceived Brahma as Brahma. He conceives Brahma.
Sorry, you better start at the beginning of that one again. He perceives.
He sees Brahma as Brahma. Having perceived Brahma as Brahma, he conceives Brahma. He conceives himself in Brahma. He conceives himself apart from Brahma. He conceives Brahma to be mine. He delights in Brahma. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives the gods of streaming radiance as the gods of streaming radiance. Having perceived the gods of streaming radiance as the gods of streaming radiance, he conceives the gods of streaming radiance. He conceives himself in the gods of streaming radiance. He conceives himself apart from the gods of streaming radiance. He conceives the gods of streaming radiance to be mine. He delights in the gods of streaming radiance. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives the gods of refulgent glory as the gods of refulgent glory. Having perceived the gods of refulgent glory as the gods of refulgent glory, he conceives the gods of refulgent glory. He conceives himself in the gods of refulgent glory. He conceives himself apart from the gods of refulgent glory. He conceives the gods of refulgent glory to be mine. He delights in the gods of refulgent glory. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives the gods of great fruit as the gods of great fruit. After he perceives the gods of great fruit as the gods of great fruit, he conceives the gods of great fruit. He conceives himself in the gods of great fruit. He conceives himself apart from the gods of great fruit. He conceives the gods of great fruit to be mine. Delights in the gods of great fruit. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives the overlord as the overlord. Having perceived the overlord as the overlord, conceives the overlord. He conceives himself in the overlord. He conceives himself apart from the overlord. He conceives the overlord to be mine. He delights in the overlord. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. Perceives the base of infinite space as the base of infinite space. Having perceived the base of infinite space as the base of infinite space, he conceives himself as the base of infinite space. He conceives himself in the base of infinite space. He conceives himself apart from the base of infinite space. He conceives the base of infinite space to be mine. He delights in the base of infinite space. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives the base of infinite consciousness as the base of infinite consciousness. Having perceived the base of infinite consciousness as the base of infinite consciousness, he conceives himself as the base of infinite consciousness. He conceives himself in the base of infinite consciousness. He conceives himself apart from the base of infinite consciousness. He conceives the base of infinite consciousness to be mine. He delights in the base of infinite consciousness. Why is that? because he's not fully understood it, I say. He perceives the nothing. He perceives the base of nothingness as the base of nothingness. Having perceived the base of nothingness as the base of nothingness, he conceives himself as the base of nothingness. He conceives himself in the base of nothingness. He conceives himself apart from the base of nothingness. He conceives the base of nothingness to be mind. He delights at the base of nothingness. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives the base of neither perception nor non-perception as the base of neither perception nor non-perception. Having perceived the base of neither perception nor non-perception as the base of neither perception nor non-perception, he conceives himself as the base of neither perception nor non-perception. He conceives himself on the base of neither perception nor non-perception. He conceives himself apart from the base of neither perception or non-perception. He conceives the base of neither perception or non-perception to be mind. He delights in the base of neither perception nor non-perception. Why is that? Because he's not fully understood it, I say. He perceives the seen as the seen. Having perceived the seen as the unseen, he conceives himself... Having perceived the seen as the seen, conceives himself as the seen. He conceives himself in the seen. He conceives himself apart from the seen. He conceives the seen to be mind. He delights in the seen. Why is that? Because he's not fully understood it, I say. He perceives the herd as the herd. Having perceived the herd as the herd, he conceives himself as the herd. He conceives himself in the herd. He conceives himself apart from the herd. He conceives the herd to be mind. He delights in the herd. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives the sensed as the sensed. Having perceived the sensed as the sensed, he conceives himself as the sensed. He conceives himself in the sensed. He conceives himself apart from the sensed. He conceives the sensed to be mind. He delights in the sensed. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives the cognized as the...
Cognized.
Having perceived the cognized as the cognized, he conceives himself as the cognized. He conceives himself in the cognized. He conceives himself apart from the cognized. He conceives the cognized to be mind. He delights at the cognized. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives unity as unity. Having perceived unity as unity, he conceives himself as unity. He conceives himself in unity. He conceives himself apart from unity. He conceives unity to be mind. He delights in unity. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives diversity as diversity. Having perceived diversity as diversity, he conceives himself as diversity. He conceives himself as in diversity. He conceives himself apart from diversity. He conceives diversity to be mind. He delights in diversity. Why is that? Because he's not fully understood it, I say. He perceives all as all. Having perceived all as all, he conceives himself as all. He conceives himself in all. He conceives himself apart from all. He conceives all to be mind. He delights in all. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say. He perceives Nibbana as Nibbana. He perceives Nibbana as Nibbana. He conceives himself as Nibbana. He conceives himself in Nibbana. He conceives himself apart from Nibbana. He conceives Nibbana to be mind. He delights in Nibbana. Why is that? Because he has not fully understood it, I say.
What's the time?
12 minutes.
Do you want to take a little break and then go, do you have something you would like to explain about that from your studies?
Yeah.
what's been talked about so far, maybe?
Well, the only thing that I sense from that is that there's duality there. It's talked about the separateness between the self and other people.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And the other thing that's interesting about this is you know immediately who he's talking to. He's talking to a bunch of people who are really skilled meditators. Because he has just gone through the classical meditations. Meditation on earth, meditation on water, meditation on fire, meditation on air. Those are the first four elements for casino practices, right? You see that? He's just gone through there, and he says someone can be meditating on earth and have a clear perception. Not perception. Having perceived earth as earth, clearly have a real meditation experience of earth. A real meditation experience so that there is a strong movement, a strong mystical movement in the consciousness of the meditator. Right? Beyond your usual experience. Therefore you say, gee, I must be enlightened now. That's the problem with transcendence, is that you can have a transcendent experience that just takes you to a higher level of a limited view. That's why we need our Sangha. And this is what he is talking to, a bunch of people who have really skilled meditation and have had some very powerful experiences, including all the psychic powers. That's what it means by the seen and the heard. It's the divine eye and the divine ear. The psychic power of being able to hear all thoughts or experiences, to see cause and effect, to see things from afar, right? Past, future. That's what that's referring to.
Which verse is that? Which verse?
When he perceives the senses, right, on page 86, isn't it? Yeah, 19. He perceives the seen as the seen. So he's perceiving directly into seeing.
This can also apply to people who have had drug experiences.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Those insights, but
yeah.
But they're undisciplined and they're dumb.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Exactly. And so it's very interesting because he goes through the whole procession of meditations, and all of these people have done these meditations, and they have all been successful in them, and they are all well established as meditators. And they're all caught in that view. And so first of all, it goes through the elements. And then it goes to beings as beings. Remember what I said, that from the Dhammakara, the triangle, then comes the four elements, piled one on top of one another. And then from that, the being arises. So from doing the four elements, then one can see the coming into being and passing away. It's basically one. Sometimes people use the light casino for that. But then you can see coming into being and passing away of many beings here and here, and understand the arising and passing away of beings. That's a natural progression of how these meditations work. Okay, so that's the next one. That's the number 7. Number 8, perceives gods as gods, and specifically, what makes the being a god being? Prajapati is Prajapati, is one of the gods. Brahma is Brahma. Gods of streaming radiance is the gods. So this is like then now the consciousness opening to many realms, moving beyond just the human realm, and clearly understanding and perceiving that there is no separateness. I am not separate from that. And then also clearly perceiving, I am separate from that. It's all there here. It all says that there. You're looking at vast. This is a major meditation report. Mm-hmm. You know, in set down in a formula. But can you see that now? Could you see that when Wayne was reading it? Can you see it now? That what he is doing, he's just ticking off everybody's experience, starting from kindergarten, and they're all sitting there like, you know, off in some major jhana, perceiving this with the divine ear, right? And slowly he's zeroing in on them, and they're starting to feel slightly uncomfortable by the time he gets to the end of this section. Because he's not saying, oh, aren't we all a bunch of good meditators? You know, he's not saying that. He's saying he has not fully understood. You know, you may have a wonderful experience, dearie, but you haven't understood it yet. And he's saying that with these beings who, like, go into boundless space, right? He perceives the sense, he understands senses. You know, do you know what that means, the sense doors? It's one of the things that the Buddha once said, so far as the sense doors exist, so far as the sense doors reach, so far it is the range of the phenomenal. Where the sense doors are no longer existent, there is no longer a phenomena, any phenomena. So rather than looking at phenomena and trying to prove it's real, one should look at the sense doors. Now in highest yoga tantra and in lesser yoga tantra, as one initiation I received into Amitabha, had these dakinis, these red hot tomato goddesses, at each sense door, and sometimes they had these sticks with five colored rainbow light, kind of like the tassels on these, you know. And sometimes they would wave the flags out, and sometimes they would wave the flags in. And that's what the sense doors are. They're radiant energy that sometimes moves this way and sometimes moves that way. And perceiving that the sense doors are that radiant energy that is not separate from all energy transforms hearing and seeing. And so you start with hearing and you start with seeing, and you're still looking for specific things, and then you go just to the energy of sensing. And that's what that one is, the sensing. Then you understand sensing as energy, as a dancing energy. And then the number 22, clearly understanding cognition, clearly perceiving the cognitive process, clearly perceiving it, and then delighting in that, delighting in cognizing. I know that one. And then going to unity and diversity, and going right up to the experience, but still just staying as an observer. Staying within that protective circle. Right, because that's what I was talking about it in relation to the Vajrayana. Do you understand what I'm saying? The protective circle? The ignorance. Staying within the ignorance. Having all the experiences, but having all of the experiences within ignorance. Like watching a movie on a video screen in your home of the Grand Canyon, rather than being in the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm. That's what you're doing here. Is that clear? Mm-hmm. So these guys, you know, they're starting to feel a little uncomfortable at this point. Is he going to check? Is he going to tell us how good we are soon? So carry on. My watch is broken.
The discipline and higher training. Bhikkhus. Bhikkhu is... a bhikkhu is
You're leaving a word out there?
No. Bhikkhus, a bhikkhu, who is in higher training, whose mind has not yet reached the goal, and who is still aspiring to the supreme security from bondage. Directly knows earth as earth.
So that's exactly the same as the ignorant one. You know? It's exactly the same. Directly knows earth as earth. That part. That's right? Perceives earth as earth. It isn't. It's perceived in here. It's knowing. Sorry, it isn't exactly the same. Directly knows rather than directly perceives. So he's not perceiving, he's knowing it. Right, okay.
Having directly known earth as earth, he should not conceive himself as earth. He should not conceive himself in earth. He should not conceive himself apart from earth. He should not conceive earth to be mine. He should not delight in earth. Why is that? So that he may fully understand it, I say. He directly knows water as water. He directly knows all as all.
So you see it says there from 28 to 49 at the beginning of that. So that means that it goes that way from 28 to verse 28 to verse 49. It goes through all of them that were gone through for the first one. Right? Earth, water, fire, air. Do you understand?
No, I just don't understand.
See page...
The number system there.
Page... It's 50, on page 87. It says 28-49.
Yes.
So the next chapter, next verses from 28 to 49 go, he directly knows water to as water, etc. Mm-hmm. Right? The next one is... He directly knows fire as fire, etc. The next one is he directly knows air as air, etc. The next one is he perceives beings as beings, knows gods as gods, Pajapati as Pajapati, etc. All the way through the other ones, right up to all as all. Okay. And then 50 is the same one as at number 26 at above this section, right? Only now with the disciple in higher training. Okay?
So what the other heart?
50.
Okay. He directly knows Nibbana as Nibbana. Having directly known Nibbana as Nibbana, he should not conceive himself as Nibbana. He should not conceive himself in Nibbana. He should not conceive himself apart from Nibbana. He should not conceive Nibbana to be mine. He should not delight in Nibbana. Why is that? So that he may fully understand it, I say.
So this is like he should let go of conceit. Someone who is in higher training is one who must continuously let go of conceit. Not self-referencing. This is directly knowing them, not thinking about them.
I don't understand, but I...
Yeah, you do. What part of you understands, Perry? Sure. Yes?
So, Cecily, is that just about the same as when the Buddha said, I use concept too, but I'm not caught in them?
I too use concepts, but I am not fooled thereby. Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Neat trick. That's a famous quote of the Buddha. It's also, I too use concepts, he said, but I'm not fooled thereby. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like taking the lid off or something. Yeah?
The higher hat. Bhikkhus, a bhikkhu who is an arahat. What's the pronunciation? Arahat?
Here, because it's the Pali, it's arahant.
Arahant, okay.
Arahant.
Okay. Who obtains this bhikkhus, a bhikkhu who is an arahant, who obtains this joy, who has lived the holy life, done what had to be done, laid down the burden.
Obtains here would mean craving. The craving is destroyed. They're at peace. Arahant is somebody who has had the experience of nibbana. The definition of nibbana is that they are at peace. They are peaceful. They are peaceful because the fires are out. The fires are craving. Okay?
Yeah. Lay down the burden, reach the true goal, destroy the fetters of being, and it's completely liberated through the final knowledge, directly knows earth as earth. Having directly known earth as earth, he does not conceive himself as earth. He does not conceive himself in earth. He does not conceive himself apart from earth. He does not conceive earth to be mine. He does not delight in earth. Why is that? Because he has fully understood it, I say. He directly knows water as water, Nibbana as Nibbana. Why is that? Because he has fully understood it, I say.
And again, from 52 to 74, right? All of those verses are there too.
The arahant, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu who is an arahant, completely liberated through final knowledge, directly knows earth as earth. Having directly known earth as earth, he does not conceive himself as earth. He does not conceive himself in earth. He does not conceive himself apart from earth. He does not conceive earth to be mine. He does not delight in earth. Why is that? Because he is free from lust through the destruction of lust. He directly knows water as water, Nibbana as Nibbana. Why is that? Because he's free from lust through the destruction of lust. The arahat 3. Bhikkhus. A bhikkhu who is an arahat, completely liberated through final knowledge, knows earth as earth. Having directly known earth as earth, he does not conceive himself as earth. He does not conceive himself in earth. He does not conceive himself apart from earth. He does not conceive earth to be mine. He does not delight in earth. Why is that? Because he is free from hate through the destruction of hate. He directly knows water as water, Nibbana as Nibbana. Why is that? Because he's free from hate through the destruction of hate. The arahat 4. Bhikkhus. A bhikkhu who is an arahat, completely liberated through final knowledge, directly knows earth as earth. Having directly known earth as earth, he does not conceive himself as earth. He does not conceive himself in earth. He does not conceive himself apart from earth. He does not conceive earth to be mine. He does not delight in earth. Why is that? Because he is free from delusion through the destruction of delusion. He directly knows water as water, Nibbana as Nibbana. Why is that? Because he's free from the delusion through the destruction of delusion.
Okay, so that's arahat. Any questions about that?
Yes. Okay, so in 75, when he's speaking about lust, he's speaking in the sexual sense, lust? I've also heard, like, greed and lust similar and the same, but he's speaking the sexual lust.
Any kind of lust.
Okay, so it's desire of any kind.
This is the craving, you know, when I talked about the root of existence being three things in the triangle, one of them was craving, right? And craving consists of greed, hatred, which are always coupled with delusion, and lust, jealousy, any of those kinds of, they're all sort of together. So here they are probably translating lobha. I don't know. There'll probably be a footnote that tells us. I don't know whether they're translating raga or lobha. They don't exactly tell us what they're using here, but it is the discipline in higher training is in Pali, is the Sekha, and the higher training has to do with overcoming the 10 fetters, right? The last two fetters to fall, one of them is craving and one of them is conceit. So the first, what does it say here? Refraining conceiving and delight. With the attainment of stream entry, he eradicates the fetter of personality view and thus can no longer conceive in terms of wrong views. Defilement of craving and conceit are only uprooted. Yeah, craving and conceit are only uprooted by the path of arahatship. So they're talking that at this point that the arahat then directly cuts through the last two fetters that bind him. And it's not talking about sexuality per se, it's talking about, unless you call sexuality the life force, then it would be talking about that. It's talking about the desire for becoming. If you're using it that way, then it would be, lust would be talking more about the desire for becoming, craving, the desire for becoming.
The desire for becoming, as opposed to desire for things, beautiful things or pleasurable things, desire for becoming. I'm not sure.
I don't have the Pali words in front of me here. And I think we're going to go through this sutra a couple of times. So maybe I don't see here. But not necessarily, and that's why I'm looking in the footnotes to see if they have it as raga or as lobha or, you know. Yeah, I don't think it would be tanha, but it could be, you know. There are a lot of other things it could be. See, in 26 footnote, it says, because he has eradicated the three unwholesome roots, lust or greed, hatred and delusion.
So
they
are using roots as those three
as
the root?
No, as one set of roots, but not the roots that are, not the roots of becoming. Mm-hmm. I know. And you know, like, in my mind it's really clear, but in my mouth it's not coming out clear. They are different. One is like the cervix of existence. And that false view craving, which includes all the 10 fetters, basically. Does that make sense to you?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, let's not go here until I can get. I've got a Pali.
Conceit is also one of the 10 fetters.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, it is.
I mean, the church is, at some level, it doesn't matter at all, but just if we're trying to get the kind of orderly picture, I'm not getting the picture.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I'm very hesitant to say what my mind, you know, my experience and my mind are wanting to say, because I don't have the Pali words in front of me. So I don't want just to put my view out. I mean, I do, but I don't. I'm refraining. So I'm stumbling a bit here. But I have this text in Pali. And so, you know, next time I come, we can, on Thursday night, I'll tell you what the Pali words are for this, and you guys can research it too and get it in Pali.
Sure.
Is that good?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll go back to the text and painstakingly trace it through, because I don't have it in Pali English. I just got a Pali textbook, but it's just in Pali, and my reading in Pali is extremely rusty. But I would really like to do that. I'd like to find out what they're actually translating. Yeah. That would be more useful just for that and for understanding that. You have a question?
No.
I just, my feeling here on this one, it just seems quite strong, is that in this case it has to do with the entire of coming into being.
Yeah.
That kind of feeling of craving
for existence,
for
separateness.
Yeah.
Yeah, based on ignorance.
Yeah.
See, ignorance unfolds from a point or from a circle, unfolds and has three facets. And those three facets are the birth of all beings. All beings are born from those three facets. So they're called, you know, the cervix of creation. And the womb is void nature. And the labor pains are ignorance. Well, those are the images used in Tantra, in the Vajrayana. And they're used because if you meditate with that view and start working there, you can actually feel that happening, and you can feel yourself born that way and yourself dissolving that way. So then, what is the consciousness of when the stars have gone out? To paraphrase badly, Rainer Maria Rilke. Yes, and carry on. How's our time, by the way?
It's finished, sure. Right? It's
5 minutes is all we need.
Yeah. Tathagata.
Tata. See that mark above the A?
Okay.
See that mark above the A?
Yes.
What does it mean?
No.
It means that A is longer, more stressed. Tata. Tathagata. That's the stress, and it's a longer A.
The tathagata, coming from, because the tathagata.
Start again, say it again.
The
tathagata. That's it. Tathagata.
Tathagata.
Tathagata. Watch my lips. Ta ta ga ta. Ta ta ga ta. Come on. Ta ta ga ta. 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 Let's hear it.
Ta ta ga.
No, ga ta.
Pardon?
Ga ta.
Ga ta.
Ta ta ga ta. Ta ta gate.
Tata.
Gate.
Gate.
Gata.
Tata.
Gata.
Gata. Tata, gata. Okay. bhikkhus, the Tathagata accomplished and fully enlightened directly knows earth as earth. Having directly known earth as earth, he does not conceive himself as earth. He does not conceive himself in earth. He does not conceive himself from earth, apart from earth. He does not conceive himself, he does not conceive earth to be mine. He does not delight in earth. Why is that? Because he is not, he has understood that that delight is the root of suffering, and that with being as the condition there is birth, and that for that whatever has come to be there is aging and death. Therefore because through the complete destruction, fading away, cessation, giving up, relinquishing of craving, that Tathagata has awakened to supreme full enlightenment, I say. He directly knows water as water, nibbana as nibbana. Why is that? Because he has understood that delight is the root of suffering, and that with being as condition, there is birth. And that for whatever has come to be, there is aging and death. Therefore, because through the complete destruction, fading away, cessation, giving up and relinquishing of craving, that Tathagata has
awakened. Sorry, do that again.
Okay, the Tathagata.
Slowly, just one syllable at a time.
Okay.
Just pretend they're separated. The okay. First one is just T-A.
Okay.
The second one is T-H-A.
Okay, Tathagata.
Yeah.
Has awakened to supreme full enlightenment, I say. That is what the Blessed One said, but the bhikkhus did not delight in the Blessed One's words. Usually expecting the top of the draft.
Okay, so questions? Maybe if you use addiction instead of craving. Would that make it clearer? But addiction is not the same thing as lust, is it? Huh? Addiction is addiction. And I think addiction is a closer word in our world. It's like that level. And so that the addiction, most of addiction is in your mind. You know that. So the delight is a mental delight more than anything. But it's also physical. So the sense of, when it says delight here, basically the word they're translating there, I know this, is craving. But I would, that's why I'm thinking it just strikes that we should use the word addiction rather than craving. That might make it clearer. Does that help, Christine?
So, for example, you say he is addicted to the cognize? Is that what you're saying?
Where? Which one?
22. 22? I just picked anyone up.
22? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because we are addicted to our views, aren't we? Mm-hmm. Our preferences. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly. And I think that's closer in our language to how the Buddha used the word for craving.
Which word do you know that he
was using for? And now my mind has gone blank. I could feel that question coming, and I just watched my mind just go into, like, gone. Sorry.
Next time.
Okay.
I kind of like that, because it has more of a feeling of calm.
hotness.
Yeah, and also a lot of our cravings we don't even question, we just assume they're us. You know, like the what you have
they
for breakfast.
Us.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're more us than us are. And exactly. So ignorance, and ignorance, then the three energies, craving, conceit, and they're like links, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And views. And they're like three facets of the same energy that opens out from ignorance. The doorway opens out, and it's the womb door. And from that comes the movement of energy that moves, that fits through that or works through that, interacts with the four elements and beings around. So all these guys that are listening to this sutra, they've done every part of this, but they haven't looked at the roots. They haven't looked at the addiction, the view, and the conceit. They've explored the whole range of existence, but they haven't explored the motives.
Sounds like they're experiencing some resistance.
And they don't want to. You have a question?
Well, I took it at the end that they got it.
No, because they were not pleased.
Well, he accepted, he says in the one previous, like the last thing he's saying is, don't delight in this. Like,
don't be addicted. Do you understand if I'm saying that the word addicted is what you should be using there?
For the word delight.
They're using the word delight here, but it is craving.
Okay, but then at the end it says that, like the last thing was...
That craving is the root of suffering. Okay. Do you understand that? Page 89, number 172. He indirectly knows water is water, nibbana is nibbana. Why is that? Because he has understood that delight is the root of suffering, right?
Mm-hmm.
It isn't. That is the word for craving there in Pali. But they're using the delight aspect of it, something that looks good, and so therefore you want it.
But then the last line, he said, but those bhikkhus did not delight in the Blessed One's word. I mean, I took that to mean they finally got it. They didn't delight in it.
No. No. That isn't what they weren't. No. That is not what is being. That's not how the commentary was taught me.
Okay. It's just that it's the same word as the.
They didn't get it until later. There is a further sutra where it refers back to this and they get it.
Okay.
And they don't get it here. And they are not happy with him.
Okay.
And a lot of them were going to leave. Because
okay.
He obviously didn't know what he was talking about. That's how it was taught to me.
Okay.
So this is what I'm passing on.
So Cecily, were they like these accomplished meditators and they were all kind of sitting there thinking, well, I can do this one, I can do that one, I can do this. Is that the sense of...
They were all fully aware. They had all had experiences that were equivalent to in terms of psychic power and a clarity of understanding coming into being and passing away, equivalent to arahat, but they had not perceived the self as not non-existent. So they were, I am arahat. I am awakened. I have this experience. And he's saying, no. Yeah. What an excellent idea, but no.
In the footnote, it talks about why the reason they weren't happy also is because of the Pranic views.
What? Where are you? What page?
31 in the footnotes. On page
31. Oh, that would be back here, way back here.
The footnote 31.
29, 30, 31. The bhikkhus did not delight in the Buddha's words, apparently because the discourse probed too deeply into the tender regions of their own conceit and perhaps their residual Brahmanic views.
Now, what would those... Well,
Brahmanic views are based on the idea that there is a permanent soul or self that continuously is reborn and slowly works its way up to, you know, kind of like Christianity, but over several lifetimes. You get to go to heaven, and everybody is going, but some people they're on a real slow track. The Brahmins are just about there. Kind of like Christianity because of the belief in a permanent self or a soul. So from that point of view. But not the mystical Brahmins. In mystical Hinduism, there is not the belief in a permanent self or soul. But you don't find that very... Just like in mystical Christianity, it's the same. In every tradition you will find the same experiences, I swear. Well, here it is, right here. At a later time, when their pride had been humbled, the Buddha expanded to these same bhikkhus the Gotamaka Sutta. And that's in the Anguttara Nikaya. And that's where I've read it. I'll check and see if I have a copy of that. Bring it, okay? In the course of which they all attained arahatship. Yes! They made it to the big time. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Yes?
Okay, here's something. Now, all we've been talking about, you know, saying that they didn't quite get it because they hadn't understood that there's no self.
No inherent self.
No inherent self. Okay. And like...
It was their attainment. They believed they had an attainment.
Right. Okay, so here's what I have to add. Earlier you said you have to love yourself. Okay. And...
I said when you love yourself, you're not so caught in defending.
Okay.
Right?
Yes, yes.
Isn't that what I was saying?
Yes.
That when you love yourself, there is less self.
Yes, yes.
You're more open to just hearing everything. You don't have to agree with things.
Yes. And I just have to add one quick thing. You know, on a computer, I put, Barry, love yourself. I was going to process it on something. And I use that as a mantra sometimes, Barry, love yourself, Barry, love yourself, because... I have not loved myself, and other people have not loved me, and I'm much more addictive and craving and everything else when I don't love myself.
Exactly.
So for me, the way I am right now, my ego thinks that I have a self, and so if my ego thinks I have a self, it's better for me to love myself than to think, oh.
Barry, there is a self. There's no problem with that.
Yeah,
it's not permanent.
Right.
Have you noticed that you're different now than you were 2 days ago?
Yes.
Do you have the same view today that you're going to have tomorrow?
No.
You don't know. Do you have the same view now that you had last week?
No.
Then where is the self? There is a self present here, and in a week, in a day, in a minute, it will dissolve and another self will arise. There's continuously a self. You don't have to cling to it. Clinging to it causes problems because it's impermanent. So we only think we're clinging to something. Gee, is it time to wake up already?
Yeah, I'll be talking to you tomorrow, so I'll be pursuing.
Okay.
Thank you.
Somebody has a little bit of time tomorrow, is coming to the class tomorrow? No? Okay. So you notice there's a very beautiful gold light in your hearts. It spreads out through your body. All directions above, below, in front, behind. This gold light shines out in all directions. It just moves right through this room, right through the province. Just gives Stockwell Day a little relief. Anybody you want to pray for, you just image them washed by the light. Goes right through the whole planet, wherever, and beyond into space, so wherever there is ignorance, which is creating suffering of body, speech, and mind. Just feel it's washed away, and you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Thank you for your great compassion.